Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on drug side effects when we come back. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm. But submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage. The Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people, and the Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political and social activities, free from government surveillance. Now, you know, I wished I'd have thought of that, but that quotation comes from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, our princes, our politicians beller in the halls of Congress. They want more taxes, more spending, and more gun control, and you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years, now have we? Now that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts. It doesn't come from our political process. It doesn't come from our politicians. It doesn't come from our lawyers. It doesn't come from our bureaucrats. You know, old Mayor Rothschild, the founder of the Bank of England, summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power and I care not who makes the laws." Well, let me echo that by telling you that you give me the judicial power and I care not who makes the laws either. Because the real power in America is in our courts, not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email. Click onto the email machine, send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of drug interactions. Last time I showed you that there are many, many combinations of drugs in a pharmacy. He's one of my students. He's a law student, but he's a pharmacist, and this is a guy that compounds. He makes your drugs for you. He's the guy that told me about the pricing. Cocaine on the street is 1/6 the price that cocaine is in your local Rexall drugstore. And this is a druggist. This guy knows pricing and drugs. And that's why so much cocaine is sold, you know, out on the street. It's cheaper. You can buy cocaine in the drugstore. Your doctor can prescribe cocaine for you. Oh, they don't call it cocaine. They don't call it crack. They have their own names, you know. It's like Vioxx, you know, and Prevacid, you know. They have their own trademarks and trade labels and trade names. Joe, the drug dealer, his product is crack, see. But the doctor and the pharmacist and Merck and Pfizer, they've got crack, but they label it and they have it under their own trade name, you know, like Vioxx or something. So tuck that one away in your heart. Now, these drugs aren't safe. Let's talk about the safety of drugs. Drugs aren't safe. There are no safe drugs, not one, not even aspirin. Aspirin is not a safe drug because when you're taking aspirin, you're taking a chemical, which is going to mix with other chemicals if for no other reason the strawberries and the shortcake and the hydrogenated vegetable oil that you're eating in your Oreo cookies, for crying out loud, are all chemicals that mix in your stomach and they form different compounds. And God only knows what's going to happen in your body when these various chemical compounds mix. And that's why it's killing 300,000 people a year that they admit to. I keep saying that they admit to. The real number is higher than that by about double, but then I'm just going to stick with their numbers. And that's a 747 crashing every day. More than that. It's 1.5. It's a 747 with 500 people crashing every day in the United States. Now compare that with the 3 Marines that were killed by a roadside bomb yesterday in Baghdad. Come on, kids. That's why I said perspective. Now, you'll find as many safe drugs out here in the marketplace as you will find virgins in a whorehouse. You got that? You're going to find as many safe drugs in the marketplace, in your drugstore, in your doctor's office, as you're going to find virgins in a whorehouse. None. Zero. Zilch. Now, according to recent commentary in the Journal of the American Medical Association, now this is the trade publication, this is right out of the mainstream press, boys and girls, a competent drug safety program would have 4 parts. Number 1, a program to monitor all adverse effects from prescription drugs and annually report the number of injuries and deaths and their likely causes. Currently, no one keeps such statistics. You got that? Boys and girls, there is no one in America keeping those numbers. We don't know. That makes all the sense in the world. We don't want to know either. We don't want to know how many people are dying from Vioxx. We hope it's nobody, but if it's 10 a day, we don't want that reported. It's bad for sales. Number 2, a program to monitor side effects from new drugs. Presently, the FDA's division of Pharmacovigilance and Epidemiology. It's called the DPE. That's why they have to call them DPE. Who in hell can pronounce Pharmacovigilance and Epidemiology? They have a staff of 52 people. 52 people work at the FDA, working on a program to monitor the side effects from new drugs. Here in America, 52 people work in that department, but only 8 of those people have medical degrees. 8 out of 52 have medical degrees. Only one has a PhD in epidemiology. One. This small group collects anecdotal information about side effects of new drugs, but doesn't have the resources to be systematic or thorough. The problem with anecdotal information is that only about 1% of adverse drug reactions get reported in this way. Okay, got that? Write it down. 1% of adverse reactions in America are reported. 10% of adverse reactions are reported by medical doctors, but when you get down to the adverse reactions that are being reported total, it's 1%. Hospitals don't report them. Nursing homes don't report them. For example, the FDA received an average of 82 reports each year about adverse reactions caused by the drug digoxin, or D-I-G-O-X-I-N, however you pronounce that, digoxin. This relatively small number of reports seemed to indicate that digoxin was not a big problem. However, a systematic survey of medical records revealed 202,211 hospitalizations for adverse reactions to digoxin during a 7-year period. All right, 202,000, not 82. But they were receiving 82 reports, but they took a look at the Medicare records. Now, remember, this Medicare now is a separate system all by itself. I mentioned that to you earlier. Let me tell you once again. There's 2 systems that are in operation. Medicare is one system, and the hospitals and the doctors and the nursing homes and the clinics are another system. The Medicare system reports 195,000 people a year dying from these drug interactions, and then all the rest of them outside of Medicare report another 106,000. Which total represent about 10% of all reports, but not all the reports come from doctors, and so when you put them all together, it boils down to about 1% that's being reported. The problem with anecdotal information is that only about 1% of adverse drug reactions get reported in this way. 99% go totally unreported. Well, okay. That's designed that way by Congress, the FDA, and the pharmaceutical companies. Now, I'm not here to tell you not to take drugs. I'm here to tell you that there's some problems and that this isn't near as safe as you've been led to believe. And it's time for you to wake up, smell the coffee, and then make intelligent choices. Now, my choice is I don't take any drugs, not even aspirin. Because if I go in here and I take ibuprofen, or I take aspirin, or I take something else, and I sit down and I eat, those drugs are going to interact with the foods that I eat, or maybe some other drugs that I'm taking, and I could get some adverse reactions in my body, which could kill me, or make me sick, or make me feel real bad, or do something else that's bad, wicked, terrible, awful, or evil. Now, when the FDA's DPE identifies a drug problem, they can only pass the information along to the division of FDA that approved the drug. That division can then require the manufacturer to develop additional information. However, the most common corrective action is a change in the product disclosure label or package insert. The question then becomes, are such warnings effective? Okay, now let's think about this for a minute. You think that the FDA is there to protect you from the drug companies that are making Vioxx, which is going to kill you. And if you believe that, you get your head up the wrong end of your anatomy again. The FDA doesn't do that. That's not their job. That's not what they're there for. So if you thought that's what they were there for, that's not it. Now, if you thought that the Congress, the President, or the pharmaceutical companies, or somebody else was out there to protect you, you got that all wrong. The FDA is the only agency charged with that protection, and they don't do that. You know, it's like walking into Walmart, and you want to buy a new Chevrolet. Well, that's all well and good, and this is a store, and we sell a lot of stuff here. But Chevrolets are not one of them. You can't get that here. Now, the third part of a competent drug safety program would make sure that safety information is being disseminated and heeded by physicians. Safety information. Wait a minute. The information that's being disseminated to the physicians is by the detail men. Remember that story? The detail men spend $10,000 per year per doctor, giving them free drugs and dinking around to promote the product. Not safety. Safety isn't even on the radar screen, kids. You see, we presume by the time this thing gets down to the doctor, the pharmaceutical company has already tested this and already approved, already knows about its safety. I already showed you that story. Remember that story, kids? The pharmaceutical company tests a drug on rats and mice, sometimes monkeys. They shoot them up, first of all, and give them as much as they can until it kills them. Then they slowly reduce the dosage until it doesn't kill them anymore. See, they put 100 rats in a box, and they shoot them up with 20 milligrams, and 100 rats die. All right, well, 20 milligrams is too much. So they reduce it to 15 milligrams, and 50 rats die. They reduce it to 10 milligrams, and 25 rats die. They reduce it to 5 milligrams, and 4 rats die. Now, that's acceptable. You got that? It never gets to the point where no rats die, because if no rats die, then the drug isn't effective. Remember, we got two things here. It's got to be safe and effective. It's got to do something for the pain in your bones. So, there's risk. That's why I opened today's program. I said, well, safe drugs in the marketplace are as common as virgins in a whorehouse. They don't exist. Now, if you got that in your head, we can get on to the third part of a competent drug safety program would make sure that the safety information is being disseminated and heeded by physicians. But the FDA currently has no such program. Got that? There is no such program. It doesn't exist. So if you thought it existed, well, put it out of your mind. The limited information available, however, suggests that some important safety information, such as boxed warnings on drug disclosure labels, either was not received or had very little effect. For example, one outcome of the protracted debate over the safety of the sedative triazolam was a new drug label warning that it should be prescribed for only 7 to 10 days. Several years later, an FDA task force reported that 85% of the prescriptions were being written for periods longer than 7 to 10 days. And neither the FDA nor any other agency has an organized program to find out whether the important warning messages are achieving their intended purpose of protecting the public, and if not, discovering the cause. All right, so let's think about this one for a minute. You got a drug here. And they feed it to rats for 7 to 10 days. Things are okay. They feed them to rats for 30 days, and it kills a bunch of them. Well, the drug company, they're not staffed by dummies, you know. These people all go to college. They can all read and write. And they're smart enough to figure out that, you know, if we put this out on the market, we could kill a bunch of people. So we need to put a warning label in here that says approved for 7 to 10 days. Well... Well, you know, there's a label in here, and I pointed this out to you in a series of programs a little earlier this year called Iatrogenic Disease. Take the Reader's Digest, open it up, and start turning the pages. Pretty soon you're going to come to a pharmaceutical ad, and they'll be advertising some drug, Prevacid or whatever. Then, you know, and on that page, there's this smiling young couple smoking a Salem cigarette, swinging on a green lawn, and they're taking drugs and smoking a cigarette and drinking a little Jack Daniels, and God, they just feel real good. And that's page one. Now turn the page, and there's two pages of very fine print that you have to have a 10-power loop to read. And I don't wear glasses. Kids, I don't wear glasses. I can't read the fine print on the next two pages. Now, maybe when I was 12 years old, I could, but, you know, I'm an old man now, and I can't. So I put on my 10-power loop, and all of a sudden, these letters just jump out at me, and I read the section over here where it talks about adverse effects. Now, read those adverse effects, boys and girls, and then ask yourself, is this something I want to buy? Nobody ever reads that. But you can't say that you weren't warned, and you can't say that you didn't have informed consent. You go into court and argue now that Merck killed you with Vioxx, and you're gonna poop and fall back in it. That's the bottom line. Now, the fourth part of a competent drug safety program would aggressively seek out information about unsuspected adverse reactions to drugs. Instead of waiting passively for anecdotal information to filter in, the government needs to aggressively look for drug involvement in reported birth defects, heart problems, and other common disorders that are frequently caused by prescription drugs. Hold it. Hold it. Did you get that? This guy says, you know, the government ought to. Instead of waiting passively for anecdotal information to filter in by doctors who aren't going to report it because they'd get sued if they did, the government should be aggressively looking for drug involvement in birth defects, underline birth defects, heart problems, underline heart problems, and other common disorders, underline common disorders, that are frequently caused by, underline, frequently caused by, prescription drugs. Underline, prescription drugs. Now read that back. Birth defects, heart problems, and other common disorders are frequently caused by prescription drugs. All right. Now 5% of babies born in this country have birth defects. 5%. Well, that's not very many. It's only 1 in 20. You know, young mothers in the hospital, they bring the baby in, and the young mother, you know, starts counting fingers and toes. Starts looking at the baby all over, you know, to see if there's any scratches or dents, you know. Kind of like buying a new car, you know, look it all over real good and make sure there's no scratches on it. Well, prescription drugs cause birth defects. How many birth defects? I don't know. I don't see anything here in the literature that anybody's been looking. We know it causes some. We know that 5% of births are caused by birth defects, or caused by prescription drugs, rather. We don't know how many. We don't know if it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5%. We don't know if it's all of the birth defects are caused by prescription drugs, but we know that we've got more birth defects today than we ever had in the past. We know that we're taking drugs twice as fast as we were in 1990. All right, starting to add this up now, boys and girls. Cause and effect relationship. Hey, if you want to take drugs, be cavalier about it. Hey, listen, you know, if you want to feel good, you got to take drugs. If you take drugs, there's going to be side effects. Hey, just because my kid is born with club feet, you know, there's no reason why I shouldn't take drugs. Now, of course, people blame these things on illegal drugs. And I'm sure that illegal drugs probably cause birth defects, and they probably cause a lot of adverse reactions and probably cause a lot of deaths, and illegal drugs are bad for you, and I'm not here to sell crack cocaine. I'm here to tell you that there isn't any drug out there that's safe, period. None. Zero. Zilch. That's what the literature tells you. Okay? So if you thought that there were safe drugs out there, that's like finding a safe whore at Flo's Whorehouse. Safe whores. Safe drugs. Virgin whores. Now, there was a little bit more to the story here that I reported to you day before yesterday. A total of 10 drugs. Lost compass. There's a total of 10 drugs that have been pulled from the market in just the past 3 years for safety reasons, including 3 pills that were approved before the shift that took hold in 1993. Shift. Here's what this shift was. You see, so many people were dying from AIDS that the AIDS lobby got into the Congress and they said, my God, you know, the FDA is, and their slow process of approving drugs is killing people. You know, it works two ways. People go out and they practice sodomy and they get AIDS. And then they want to come to the government, and they want the government to spend billions of dollars of taxpayer money to find a cure to AIDS, which in actual practical fact is a subsidy for sodomy. So the sodomites are saying, well, we need sodomite subsidies from the taxpayers because sodomy is a high-risk activity which causes disease, which makes us feel real bad, and we think the taxpayers ought to pay tax dollars to find solutions and cures for our problems in the sodomite community. And that's the bottom line. So the Congress said, well, look, you drug companies out there, you know, putting all these roadblocks in place to protect the public from unsafe drugs, we want to fast track this. Start looking at the drug companies as your partners instead of your adversaries. And so they changed the product process, and they fast-tracked it so that the drug companies could get these drugs to the marketplace faster. And they did. And then while the drug companies were doing it, they said, well, not only can we sell these drugs, you know, say, to the sodomites, we can sell these drugs to the diabetics, and we can sell these drugs, you know, to the hemophiliacs, and we can sell these drugs to the heart patients and cancer patients and anybody else out there that wants to buy drugs. And so they promote them. And then we believe what we see. The detail men go to the doctors, and they sell them to the doctors. Everybody's out selling drugs. It's a big industry. Everybody likes drugs. And you like drugs from Rexall, you like them from Osco Buttry, you like them from Joe, the drug dealer down on the corner. Drugs are a part of American culture. Everybody likes them. Drugs aren't safe. So you need to face the reality that, well, okay, you know, if you want to fly your airplane under the bridge, there is an inherent risk. Downdraft, you know, that's the way life is. Want to fly your airplane under power lines? Hey, this is an inherent risk. You didn't see them all. You didn't see the one that was a little lower than you thought it was. Now, you want to play Evel Knievel, you know, there's an inherent risk. Now, Evel Knievel, you know, when he takes a risk, he's doing it for money. And then there's foolishness. You know, when I was taking a risk flying my airplane under power lines and bridges, I wasn't getting paid anything for that. That's just plain stupid. Let's see, going back to our definitions, I'm not suffering. I don't know if I was suffering from insanity or not, but I was sure as hell suffering from ignorance, stupidity, and foolishness. You know, I was really a sufferer there. I might have even been insane. Hell, I don't know. You know, if I was insane, I wouldn't have been able to recognize it in myself anyway. Going under the Golden Gate Bridge, I'd looking up and saying, wow, this is really exciting. Yeah. Now, there's 10 drugs that have been pulled from the market in the past few years. Never before has the FDA overseen the withdrawal of so many drugs in such a short period of time. More than 22 million Americans, 10% of the nation's adult population, took those drugs. Okay, now 10% of you people have been exposed to these drugs. Now, with many of the drugs, the FDA used tiny print warnings or recommendations in package labeling as a way to justify approvals or stave off withdrawals. In other instances, the agency has withheld safety information from labels that physicians say would call into question the use of the product. President former FDA specialist said the regulatory decisions of senior officials have clashed with the agency's central obligation under law to protect the public health by ensuring that the drugs are safe and effective. Underline safe and effective. It's got to do something about the pain in your bones, and then it's got to be safe. All right, so they feed it to rats until they get down to the lowest possible number of fatalities. They don't eliminate the fatalities. They get them down to the lowest number possible. Did you hear that? They don't eliminate the fatalities. Now, when Ford did that, people got real upset and excited about it. Remember that? Let me describe that story for you. Back in the 1970s, Ford produced a car called the Pinto. And this Pinto had a gas tank in the back of the car. When it got rear-ended, the gas tank would break and sometimes catch on fire and burn people up. Well, Ford was suffering 30 lawsuits a year. And in the 30 lawsuits a year, they'd win some and lose some, and they were paying out around $30 million, or I think they paid out a total of $30 million over a period of about 10 years. I think that's what it was, $30 million over 10 years. They paid out, you know, to people that got killed or got hurt, and they called it product liability. Ford knew that there was a problem with the Pinto gas tank. But if they changed the gas tank on all the cars that they'd already made, it was going to cost them $100 or $200 million. So they looked at that and they said, look, we pay out about $3 million a year. And if we fix all those cars, and they were killing so many, I forgot how many they were killing. I think they were killing about 100 people a year. You know, in round numbers, I'll just give you a number. About 100 people a year were getting killed in these Pinto cars. Ford was paying out about $3 million in product liability. Over a period of 10 years, it was going to cost them $100 million. So they made a conscious decision. They just sat there and they said, look, it's true, 100 people a year are dying, but there's a $100 million cost over here to fix all these cars. So we're only paying out $3 million a year, so why don't we just keep on doing what we're doing? We'll just keep on paying out $3 million a year. That'll cost us $30 million over 10 years instead of $100 million to fix the problem. When that became public, people went ballistic. They said, well, Ford cares more about profits than they do about people. So what in the hell do you think the drug companies are thinking about? People or profits? Now, the drug companies, they approve this, the drug for manufacture and sale, after they get it down to the least number of people that they're killing. They can figure how many people are going to die from this drug by the number of rats that are dying in the laboratory. But they've got to balance that with effective. Remember, when this drug gets to the FDA, it's got to do something about the pain in your fingers. It may be screwing up your heart and causing a heart attack. Those are the four people out of 1,000 or 3.2 people per 1,000 that are going to die from these drugs. That's an acceptable loss. In other words, the drug manufacturers figure 300,000 people a year dying or 600,000 people a year dying from these drugs is an acceptable rate of death for the benefit that we're deriving from the use of the drug. It makes a lot of people feel good in their bones. The Ford people said, well, 100 people a year die from our faulty gas tanks, but that's an acceptable loss considering the amount of money that it's going to cost to fix these gas tanks. Only the drug companies are killing a hell of a lot more people than 100 people a year. When Ford killed 100 people a year, you people went ballistic. The drug companies killed 300,000 people a year, and you people don't know there's a problem. That's why I've been saying that it sounds like to me that this is irrational. 100 people dying a year is bad, and I agree with that. And $100 million a year to fix the problem, probably. That's $1 million per person. But this 100 people a year, they're dying from in these Ford cars, you know, dying every year. So in 10 years, it's 1,000 people. 1,000 people. So, you know, over a period of time, 300,000 people a year dying over 10 years is 3 million people. 3 million people have died over the past 10 years that should be alive today, or the vast majority of them should be alive today and would be alive today except for the drug interreactions. And I'm not blaming the drug companies per se. Drug companies are just there to sell drugs, and after all, that's what people want to buy is drugs. And Ford Motors is just there to sell cars, and after all, that's what people want to buy is cars. But, you know, do we want safe, effective cars? Do we want safe, effective drugs? Well, you can't have safe, effective drugs any more than you can have virgin whores down at Flo's Whorehouse. It ain't going to happen. You can have whores, and you can have virgins, but you can't have virgin whores. You can have drugs, or you can have safety, but you can't have safe drugs. It's tragic. I know. But that's the way life is. Life is tragedy. All right, let me give you your mid-course reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events, 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, I'm gonna shift horses here in the second half. This is a 10-page report, by the way. You could get this from drugawareness.org. That's www.drugawareness.org. God, there's a ton of information out here. Tons and tons of it. I'm going to break in here with article number 12. It's a book called The Cure for All Cancers. The Cure for All Cancers. The lady that wrote it, her name is Hulda, H-U-L-D-A, Clark, C-L-A-R-K. She's a convicted criminal. I just want to share that with you. You Christians out there probably wouldn't want to buy a book like this written by a convicted felon. But I want to point out that did you know that all of the apostles, all of Jesus' apostles were convicted felons? I just thought I'd share that with you. And Jesus himself was executed for treason. So an unsavory bunch, those Christians, those early New Testament Christians, they were criminals, every one of them. This lady, Hulda Clark, she's one of the criminals. And she wrote this book, and in the middle of the book, about page 368 and 369, there's a series of case histories. She included 100 case histories of people who had cancer. Yeah, that's right, people that actually had cancer. And she kept her records, of course, and then in these records, she put in there that there was benzene and various chemicals that were in this person's body, and that these chemicals had caused, or she thought they'd caused, cancer, caused this disease. Well, here's an article. I'm going to combine both of these stories for you together. List of cancer-causing agents now grows to 246 cancer-causing agents. This is as of February 1st, 2005. It's about a year old, a little over. A few do not worry about getting cancer. Now the government has added 17 more cancer-causing agents that we have to avoid. The total list now is 246. For the first time, viruses are listed. Hepatitis B virus, hepatitis C virus, and some human... Boy, this is a toughie. Well, it's a toughie here, you know, for a common plumber. Papillomaviruses. Papillomaviruses. I guess we could just call it a PLM. We'd just put a letter on it. Papillomaviruses that cause common sexually transmitted diseases. Oh, my God. You mean these sexually transmitted diseases that 25% of our teenagers attending our public schools have caused cancer? Hey, listen, this isn't Hulda now that's telling you this. This is your government. List of cancer-causing agents. The government has added 17 more cancer-causing agents that we have to avoid. One of them is called a papillomavirus that causes common sexually transmitted diseases. Other new listings include lead and lead compounds, x-rays. You got that? I was in my dentist's office the other day, and x-rays in a dentist's office are as common as pig tracks. I mean, this girl came in there, and she swings this machine down. I said, "What are you doing?" She says, "I got to take an x-ray." She says, "Open your mouth." I said, hang on, hold it, don't, stop. And she looked at me like I was having an epileptic seizure, you know. She reported me to the dentist. She said, This guy's refusing to have his x-ray. And when the dentist came in, he said, excuse me, but what's wrong with you, son? And I said, well, I'm refusing to have this x-ray because it causes cancer. And he looked at me kind of paternalistically, like, you know, you poor, dumb, ignorant, stupid fool. Anybody that believes that x-rays cause cancer or have any deleterious effect on the human body has to be stupid. But I'll tell you what I noticed when I go to the dentist's office, they set me in the chair, and then they stick this thing in my mouth, and then they stick this machine up next to my cheek, and then they all leave the room. And then I hear this, and then they come back into the room. And then they assure me, there's nothing that's unsafe about x-rays. Oh, if there isn't anything unsafe about these x-rays, how come you guys all leave the room and leave me in here all by myself? Huh? Huh? Can you tell me that? Now my government comes around here now and they tell me, lead and lead compounds, x-rays, I want to tell you people, x-rays, and then compounds found in grilled meats. Oh my God, now you're telling me I can't have my grilled meat, I can't have my Big Mac, and a host of substances used in textile dyes, paints, and inks. 17 more, 246 of these compounds. The Department of Health and Human Services released the list in its 11th edition of the report on carcinogens published yesterday. Among U.S. residents, 1 in 2 men and 1 in 3 women will develop cancer at some point in their lifetimes. Okay. Now, I've given you this number before. You should have this one memorized. 1900. Write that down, boys and girls. 1900. Cancer rate in this country was 1 in 33. Okay, now get this one. 2006, write that down, 2006, cancer rate, 1 in 2 men, 1 in 3 women, and they promise us that by the year 2020, write that one down, 2020, it'll be 1 in 1. Got that? Now, a dummy like me comes along, and I picked up this convicted felon's book, The Cure for All Cancers, which, by the way, is one of 9 cures for cancer. And she has a section in here, and in this section, I want to read you a story in here that this lady, who, by the way, she's got letters after her name, too. She's a PhD and an MD. She's a naturopathic doctor. Comes from Canada. And went to all these prestigious schools and did all these things. And so her take on cancer is that you should treat it a little differently than cut, burn, and poison. And it runs counter to the orthodox methodology that is promoted by allopathic medicine, at least here in the United States. Well, over here on page 368... I put down here, I'm looking for number page 367, oh, here it is. The guy's name is Ken Kitzinger. Evidently, he gave his permission to use his name in this book on page 367. And here's the report. It says, Ken is a quiet but highly attentive young man of 19. This kid, this kid should be flying airplanes under bridges. He shouldn't be in here getting cancer treatment, for crying out loud. Here's a kid, 19 years old. He said his parents had brought him to our office for depression, but he disagreed with this opinion. But parents are respectfully quiet, or both parents were respectfully quiet while he spoke. He is currently getting psychiatric counseling, and I explained the cause of serious depression to be brain parasites and toxic elements accumulated in the brain. It was therefore quite shocking to see the initial test results. And so here's the initial test results. Protein 24, HIV, none. Orthophosphatyrosine cancer, yes, at brain. He has brain cancer. She has a big X over here in the box. HCG, precancer, yes, at brain in the blood. Then she's got fasciolopsis parasite. Yes, at the liver, intestine. No, at the brain. And then fasciolopsisridia carcaria eggs, also known as parasites. Yes, at the brain. Note, every stage of the fluke is present, suggesting a high level of solvents. Let's underline that, boys and girls. A high level of solvents, whatever these mysterious things called solvents are. Note that the cancer marker HCG is present in the blood. It could have been found clinically by a blood test. Finding this brain cancer was rather shocking, but his mother stated that Ken's first cousin, a boy, had died of brain cancer at age 18. So the news of Ken's brain cancer was not totally unbelievable. I could assure them of a complete recovery. And then she goes down here, and there's a solvent here called benzalkonium solvent. And you know what she said? Go off toothpaste. Oh, my God. Yes, right here. It says benzalkonium solvent. And so her recommendation was go off toothpaste. Asbestos. Well, you've heard of asbestos. Now, I bet you never heard of this benzalkonium solvent, but you've probably heard of asbestos. A toxic element, yes, high at the brain. Change dryer belt to USA made. Bring in the old belt for testing and test the hair blower. He will make his own hairspray, switch shampoos, and go off benzene-containing items on the benzene list. He will stop eating out of styrofoam. Boys and girls, every time you go to the restaurant, remember this? You go to the restaurant, and you don't clean your plate, and you ask for a doggy bag. They don't bring you a doggy bag. They bring you a styrofoam container, don't they? Well, they do at Olive Garden. So, these are pretty common items, wouldn't you say? Kids, wouldn't you say that styrofoam containers are fairly common? Toothpaste? Dryer belts? Hair blowers? Hairspray? Shampoo? Okay, well, kids, these things contain benzene and asbestos. Did you know that? Yeah. And so these are common things that you find around your house. And then I was talking to Todd, Todd, the druggist, the drug man. And he pointed that out to him. He said, you know, different people have different tolerances for these various and sundry chemicals. I have a very high tolerance. You know, I go to Olive Garden and they take my extra chicken and they stick it in a styrofoam container and I bring it home and I eat it right out of the styrofoam container and I brush my teeth with Tom's toothpaste and listen, Tom's toothpaste, I mean, this is organic stuff, you know, Tom's toothpaste. This Holda says you got to stop using that stuff. I don't know, I put up about a 4-year supply of Tom's toothpaste. I had Tom's toothpaste up there and I'm telling you, I mean, I had plenty of it. Then my wife came to me and said, oh my God, did you know that Tom's toothpaste has got all this benzene, or I don't know what it's got in it, but all this bad stuff? Now, you see, my wife has cancer. She's had cancer since 1978. She had cancer long before 1978, let me tell you, but it came to a head, you know, in 1978, and she could see it then. She had these lumps running around her body. And so she had to go on this cancer regimen. And she reads crazy books like this Hulda Clark and Gerson and these other, you know, Ann Wigmore, these crazies, right-wing reactionary crazies. But I want to tell you that my wife has had cancer for 28 years. Most people that have cancer die. Did you know that? She survived cancer longer than 5 years. And she's very careful about all this stuff around the house. You know, like gas stoves are bad for cancer patients. And And there's just certain things that people that are very sensitive. Different people have different sensitivities. That's what Todd, the druggist, told me. And, you know, one guy, he's over here brushing his teeth with Tom's toothpaste, and it's not a problem in the world. Some other guy is over here, he gets brain cancer. Now, the Food and Drug Administration, along with the Department of Health and Human Services and so on, these government agencies, you know, they tell you that they fund studies, and then they publish and print this stuff. None of you people ever read it. Which is why I point out that it seems to be highly irrational to me that people take all these drugs and they believe in their government and their government reports, and then when the government says, hey, listen, we're not monitoring, you know, the FDA is not monitoring this stuff for safety now. Yes, it's true, the law charges us with safety, but, hey, you know, there's only 52 of us guys that are doing that, and we can only look at 1%. 1%. Of these safety issues. 99% goes by the board. Well, even with the 1%, they pulled 22 drugs off the market in 36 months. You heard about Vioxx the other day. Can you imagine how many drugs would be pulled off the market if they could look at 100% of it for safety? They would pull 100% of the drugs off the market for safety reasons alone, so says my student, Todd the druggist, because all drugs are poisons and all drugs are unsafe. And that's the druggist telling me that. So I just thought I'd report that to you. And then I thought, well, gee, let me report to you Hulda Clark. She comes along and says, mercury, toxic element. Yes, at the brain. This kid. Now listen to what this kid's got. He's got benzalkonium, asbestos, and mercury. Now here's remove the amalgam tooth fillings. Now go to your dentist and tell him that you want to remove the mercury fillings out of your mouth. Go to your dentist if you've got enough between your legs. Most people don't have anything between their legs and they can't tell their dentist no to x-rays. That's why they're drug addicts. They just can't say no. Some guy comes along and says, wouldn't you like to have an x-ray? Oh yeah, I guess that's a good idea. Hey, wouldn't you like to have some mercury in your mouth? Why don't you know, if you want to have a little exercise here, why don't you look up the word mercury, M-U-R-C-U-R-Y, mercury, in the dictionary. Take a look at it in the encyclopedia. Do a little study on mercury. This mercury is so toxic. I mean, this mercury is like strychnine. Yeah, that's a good one, strychnine. Or arsenic. It's deadly, toxic poison. And they make tooth fillings out of it. And then they stick it into little cavities that you have in your teeth. Do you think that's a good idea? Well, let's try it this way. Instead of your dentist, next time you go to your dentist and he says, well, we need to put a filling in. And you say, well, what kind of a filling? And he'll say, well, I think we'll probably just put in a mercury filling. You know, they'll call it a silver filling. Silver. And I always felt real good getting silver fillings. Mixed with mercury. And actually, it's a mercury filling mixed with silver. They get a little backwards, but you know, packaging and sales, you know, come into play. We don't want to sell you mercury, we want to sell you silver. So we accentuate the positive. But tell him, no, doc, I don't want a mercury filling. I want an arsenic filling. Fill my teeth with arsenic. Tell him you want a strychnine filling. Doc, Don't put arsenic. Don't put mercury in there. Or arsenic. Put strychnine in there, and then look at the doc. Look at the expression on his face. And yeah, test that sometime. Have a little fun. Tell your dentist that you don't want an X-ray because it causes cancer, and the poor guy looks at you like you know you're stupid. You tell him, well, gee, I don't want mercury in my mouth because it causes cancer. It's a heavy duty. Heavy metal, it's a toxic metal, I don't want it in my mouth. Boys and girls, I don't want strychnine in my mouth. I don't want arsenic in my mouth. I don't want mercury in my mouth. I know, I'm crazy. I don't want x-rays. Now, it could well be that you might need an x-ray. I'm not telling you should never get an x-ray, but you know, when you go to the dentist, he doesn't ask you if you want one. He just does it. I was in a dentist's office one time, and I said, "Hey, I got this hole." And I opened my mouth, and I put my finger in, and I said, I got a hole there. Can you see that?" He said, "Yeah." He's whipping all this stuff together. I said, "I got to take an x-ray of your mouth." I said, "Doc, I don't want an x-ray of my mouth. I just want the hole fixed." And he said, "I got to take an x-ray of your mouth." And I said, no, I don't want an x-ray of my mouth." And he said, "If we don't take an x-ray, I ain't going to fill your tooth." I got up and walked out. I went to the next dentist, walked in the office, and I said, "Hey, could you fill a tooth without an x-ray?" And she looked at me and said, "Yeah, I think so." She handed me the form to fill out, and I said, no, don't waste my time, don't waste yours. Go get the dentist." Dentist comes out, and he says, yeah, can I help you?" And I said, "Could you fill a tooth without an x-ray?" And he said, yeah, I think I could. I said, "Well, would you fill a tooth without an x-ray?" And he said, "Well, yeah, I guess I would." I said, "Okay. Now I'll fill out the paperwork." No sense wasting a lot of people's time over here. Now, dentists, you know, they charge an extra $35 for taking that x-ray, and I don't blame them, you know. I told this dentist, I said, "Hell, I'll just pay you the $35 for not taking the x-ray. Just fill the tooth." He wouldn't take the $35. He just had to bombard me with x-rays. I think that SOB is trying to kill me. And now I know he was, because now I got a report coming right out of the Department of Health and Human Services x-rays. It's one of the 17 new things added as of February 1st, 2005 to the 246 things that cause cancer. Hulda Clark comes along, and mercury is on the list, by the way, boys and girls. So next time you're at the dentist and they want to put mercury in your teeth, just keep that one in mind. Anyway, brain cancer is fairly rare, yet two persons, both very young, had this disease in this same family. Could it all be inherited through the placenta from the mother or through sex during pregnancy? Had his body defended him all these 19 years only now to be losing the battle? Surely he had not been using propanol all this time, nor benzene. So my guess is that the fluke resided quietly in the intestine for all family members. Then, as usage of propanol and benzene began in early adulthood, they colonized the brain and the thymus. This still does not answer why the brain was selected by the parasite stages rather than another tissue. Possibly the brain-seeking solvents, xylene and toluene, were present, the cousins choosing the same brands of beverages. Beverages? Beverages? Hey, have you taken a look at the ingredients on Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, Sprite, and all these? Yeah, just take a look. Benzene is in there. Okay, kids, well, let's go have another Coca-Cola. Let's go get us another x-ray. And then let's go get a mercury filling, shall we? I think I'll pass on all of the above, but I thought I'd share that one with you. And then they come along when you get these aches and pains in your bones, and then they give you some kind of a pill or a drug to solve the problem or to cover it up. Hey, we're running out of time again. I got to give you another reminder. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.